From New York Times best-selling author Patty Callahan comes an exquisite novel of Joy Davidson, the woman C.S. Lewis called My Whole World. Wow. Well, when poet and writer Joy Davidman began writing letters to C.S. Lewis, known as Jack, she was looking for spiritual answers, not love. Love, after all, wasn't holding together her own crumbling marriage. Everything about New Yorker Joy seemed kind of ill-matched for an Oxford don and the beloved writer of Narnia, yet their minds bonded over the letters. Embarking on the adventure of her life, Joy traveled from America to England and back again, facing heartbreak and poverty, discovering friendship and faith, and against all odds, finding a love that even the threat of death could not destroy. In this masterful exploration of one of the greatest love stories of modern times, we meet a brilliant writer, a fiercely independent mother, and a passionate woman who changed the life of this respected author and inspired books that still enchant us and change us. Joy lived at a time when women weren't meant to have a voice, and yet her love for Jack, C.S. Lewis, gave them both voices they didn't know they had. A fascinating historical novel and a glimpse into a writer's life, Becoming Mrs. Lewis is above all a love story, a love of literature and ideas, and a love between a husband and a wife that, in the end, was not impossible at all. Here's a website for you, folks. Patty Callahan Henry. And I think you have to put a little Irish accent on the end. Dee-dee-dee is what it's called at the end. Patty, thank you for joining us. And I've been kind of creeping on you a little bit in the last 24 hours. And I don't want you to get too wigged out over this. But, man, there's a lot of people saying that this is going to be like the book of the year kind of stuff. How are you feeling about the anticipation?
Wow, it's overwhelming. And, you know, hearing you read the introduction to the novel, I'm thinking, wow, I want to read that. And thinking, yeah. Oh, yeah, I wrote that. yes, it's been overwhelming. I keep saying I need to ride the wave and not be drowned by it. Because I'm as excited as it sounds like some other people are. But I'm glad to see people responding to Joy. One of my major goals in writing this book was to introduce her to the world in a new way. And it seems like that's happening. And that thrills me.
Good, good. All right, so hold on. This is fiction, but it's nonfiction. No, it's nonfiction. No, it's fiction. I mean, what is it? I mean, I know it's fiction, but it sounds so nonfiction-y. And is this about a secret love affair? Because I thought C.S. Lewis was a Christian, and you, of all people, being a preacher's daughter, you should know how scandalous it is for a strong married dame from New York to fall in love with an Oxford gentleman. I mean, I have so many questions.
Okay, wow. I mean, you mean she's human? Isn't that crazy?
No.
We don't want that. Not when it comes to C.S. Lewis, right? We don't want them to be human. We want them to be, you know, perfect. We want to keep everybody on their pedestals. You know, it is. It's historical fiction. And the reason it is, and the reason it's also nonfiction, is because it is a story that is entirely built on the skeleton of truth. So I take the facts and everything we can know, and I build this skeleton built of everything we absolutely know. And then the rest is imagined, it's conjecture. Everybody has their opinion about her and about what happened between them. So I turned to the only source that mattered for me in writing this story, and that was her. So I read her letters, her poetry, her essays, her novels, her, you know, everything she wrote about that time in her life is how I wrote the book. That's why it's in the first person, is because I wanted to write it from behind her eyes in what I call the key of empathy for her as her. So we have to say fiction when we're talking about filling in the gaps, because nobody knows. Nobody walked around with a tape recorder while they hiked Shotover Hill. Nobody sat there with a stenograph while they sat in the Bird and Baby and had a pint. So we have to imagine what was said between them, and that's where the fiction comes in.
Please tell me that you've had a pint in that pub.
I absolutely
did. A single pint.
I might have had more than one. I might, but we're not going to talk about that because it doesn't matter.
No, it does matter.
So no, I did. I visited Oxford, and what I did was I made this big list, and I called it In the Steps of Joy, And I walked everywhere and did everything as much as I could on this side of the grave of her life there. And one of those things had to include sitting in the Burden Baby and having a pint or a whiskey.
How about her family? How about Joy's family? Have you heard from any of them? Someone suing you because it's so silly? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, have you gotten permission from them? Are they in love with you? Have they invited you over for tea?
Okay, that is a great question. And one of the most synchronistic and miraculous things that happened during the writing of this book. So no one in her family is left except her son, Douglas, who is now in his 70s and lives in Malta. Yes, I had to look it up, but it's a little island off Italy. And he's lived there for a long while, but he's very active. He is the manager of the C.S. Lewis estate. He is the only one left. Her other son, Davy, passed away, and her parents and her brother are gone. And obviously, Lewis is gone and his brother. So Warren, who also lived with them. But I did not contact him when I was writing the book. And I thought about it numerous times, but I wanted to write it from her point of view. I was very careful not to get too many opinions. I wanted to be her as much as I could. And yet, I did a lot of my research at the Wade Center, which is where six of the most famous British authors from that time period, the 40s, 50s, 60s, their papers are housed at the Wade Center at Wheaton College outside Chicago. That includes J.R.R. Tolkien, Lewis, Barfield, Williams, Dorothy Sayers, and Joy's papers are there. And so I had gone there to do research and kept in touch with the research librarian. And then one day I got an email, and this is what it said. It said, "Hello, Palti." The email actually didn't say that, but it said, "I hear you've been asking after my mother. May I help you?" I might have had a little panic attack before I answered him, but we quickly bonded.
Wow.
And he quickly understood that I was writing this novel out of absolute admiration, that I was writing this novel to give her a voice in a new generation, that I was writing this novel for Joy. Joy has so much to teach us, not just as women, but as anyone trying to find their true self or their inner light or seek a life of truth when society is keeping holding you back and telling you to do anything but. So once I told him my goal and what I was doing and how I felt she had something to say to this new generation, he was an immense help. He talked to me on the phone. He told me some stories that ended up in the novel. He helped me to quickly get all my permissions from the C.S. Lewis estate. So as you can see in the novel, I use her poetry and I use some real things they said in, you know, that are recorded or written. And I had to get permission to use those things. And he was, you know, completely helped me do that.
I mean, it is fascinating stuff just to see you. I mean, someone needs to write a book about you writing this book, because the journey that you have been on writing this book has taken you to some incredible places. And you have immersed yourself into the whole C.S. Lewis world. Some might say you're a bit of a C.S. Lewis creeper. I don't know. Is that fair?
Maybe.
Yeah. So
if he had a Facebook page, I'd be all over it, for sure.
So the part of this story that I'm the most interested in is, well, there are two parts. One, I'm a love junkie. Like, I am a walking emotional Hallmark dude.
Okay. Oh, I love that.
But don't tell anybody.
Okay, I won't. And I won't tell your listening audience either.
Okay. I'm a love story junkie. The other thing is the dynamics, the spiritual dynamics between them. I mean, Mrs. Lewis, you know, she's an ex-atheist, converted Jew, a former communist, married to this Christian guy who drank and smoked a pipe, and that's my kind of Christian guy. So let's talk about the spiritual dynamics there first between them, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that the point of a lot of the original letters to Mr. Lewis from Joy?
Yes. So, and I'm with you. I'm 100% a love junkie. This is actually my 13th novel. It's my first novel that's historically set or about real people. My other novels are completely imagined, but all of them in one way or another deal with the vagaries of love, and from obsessive love to true love to what is love. I mean, I'm constantly trying to figure that out. And that's part of what drew me to this story, was this improbable love affair, or love story, not affair. There's no way these two people should have ever met, much less been friends, much less fallen in love, and no way ever married. So the improbability of great love has always fascinated me, the way it can conquer things that we believe are impossible. But yes, it was a spiritual experience that Joy had, and she called it a mystical experience, and I really like that she calls it that, because when she had this experience, she didn't understand it. But Joy was a genius. She was a prodigy. She graduated from high school at 14 years old, from graduate school at 19 years old. She was an award-winning poet. She was a novelist. She was a constant seeker of the truth. So when this mystical experience happened to her, where she felt God's presence in her life when her husband threatened suicide and she was home alone with her two young sons, instead of putting that mystical experience in a box and saying, okay, so that happened, but now I'm going to get on with my life, she wanted to know what that meant. She has this great quote where she says that, I'm going to paraphrase it, that, you know, life is too intense to be endured with logic alone. And that's how she felt after this experience. So in her search for what it meant, she remembered reading some of Lewis's old work. And she had read the Screwtape Letters, The Great Divorce, Mere Christianity, and kind of put them in the box of fancy. And then she read an article written about him by Chad Walsh in the Atlantic Monthly called Apostle to the Skeptics. And she decided she was going to write to him and ask him questions. And that's how it started. So a spiritual quest began this intense intellectual friendship. And so they were pen pals for almost 3 years before she ever even met him.
Okay, I don't know the brain or the mind of a female very well. I'm hoping you do. So let me ask you this. Was it a ploy? Was this in her, like, in her thoughts right from the get-go? She was going to, you know, oh, let's talk about God and let's talk about things you're interested in. And then, boom, they're in love.
Absolutely not. In my humble or not so humble opinion, absolutely not. This is a man who was almost 17 years her senior. This was a man who lived across the ocean in England. This was an Oxford Don. This was a woman desperate for understanding. Yes, her marriage was crumbling, and yes, things were not going well, but her initial impetus from the things I've read that she wrote, not what other people say about her, but what she says about herself, her initial impetus was spiritual understanding. She wanted someone who was an intellectual equal with her to talk about these things she did not understand. In the novel, I say these questions that would not leave her alone. And so, as you know, especially if you're as sensitive as you say you are, you know that it's just as easy to fall in love over words and ideas and literature, yes, as it is to fall in love at first sight. So I do believe that the more they communicated with each other, the more, I say in the novel, this is not her words, but it's in the novel, that out of the corner of her eye, she saw a different kind of life, a different kind of relationship. She saw this thing out of the corner of her eye that she couldn't quite yet grasp. So no, I do not think that she originally wrote to him as some kind of ploy. Absolutely not.
All right. I know I'm probably a jerk for asking that, but anyway.
No, it's a really good question. And the reason it's a really good question is because when I first started the research, there are such conflicting reports about her. And that's what fascinated me from the get-go, was that, you know, who was this woman really? This kind of manipulative woman who seduced Lewis, or this brilliant, wise, intelligent woman who enchanted Lewis? Like, was she both? Was she either or? Is there a duality there, a non-duality? Who was she? And that, so no, your question is great, because it is the question I asked when I got started with all of this.
I mean, it would make sense that this bachelor, this successful, notable, well-respected bachelor would get hooked through words, not by the hottie at the end of the bar. You know what I mean?
No, but it's true. You have to know what kind of man Lewis was. And that's the kind of man he was. He, you know, he enjoyed that banter. That was what he lived for. That's why he founded the Inklings. That's why he was an Oxford Don. That's why he met with his friends in the evenings. He loved that kind of intellectual and witty banter. So it would make sense that that would be, if he ever fell in love, that would be the kind of woman he would fall in love with. On top of it, she was very forward. She was a New York intelligent woman. She was not a demure, shy, you know, kind of win him over with her womanly wiles kind of woman. She was his intellectual equal, and that is where they began.
Well, I had a lovely conversation recently with Stephen Hawking's ex-wife. Of course,
That's amazing.
Yeah, the movie that, well, the big movie that was about his life, based on her book. And she was a brilliant, she is a brilliant woman as well, but she had a much more sort of British, genteel, soft, you know, a very different flavor than Joy did. And again, that's what makes this story so nuts, is this, this is not at all how it went down, I know, but it's like you can imagine this. This broad from New York, starting off with words, and then when they meet, the first time he hears her speak in her New York accent, he's just like, what have I got myself into?
Absolutely. And his friends, same. His friends were kind of appalled. you know, Tolkien, who was his, you know, one of his dearest, would never really did accept her. And, if he did, I haven't read that. I never want to put down statements that might... It seems as if Tolkien never really accepted her. He didn't go to her funeral. He didn't, which really hurt Lewis. But no, I mean, could you imagine? It's 1952, and this woman walks into a restaurant to meet C.S. Lewis with his friend George Sayer, and she says hello in this New York accent. I mean, in the novel, I imagine it, and I have every room head in the room turning, like, what? you know, yeah. And not only that, but she didn't hold her tongue well. I mean, it was, she would be the first to admit that she didn't hold her tongue well. So she would think it, she would say it. She was very forward, and I often talk about the names she was called and is still called sometimes. Wow. And how fascinating and horrible that is to me simultaneously, because the words I would use for her are fiery and brilliant and courageous and forthright, where someone else might say abrasive. And, you know, so we have to be careful of the names we use when labeling women. And those were some of the ones they used with her.
Let me just remind everyone again, the book is called Becoming Mrs. Lewis. And the woman behind the book is Patty Callahan. But you, Patty, you have another name as well. I'm confused with the three names. Can you just help me, please, with the three names?
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that's one too many names for you to keep. So we're just gonna stick with Patty Callahan.
Okay.
Yes, my full name is Patty Callahan Henry, and that is the name I've always written under. Callahan is my maiden name. Henry is my married name. And when I was writing this book, I say we because I feel like Joy wrote it with me. When I was writing this book, I was doing it in secret and for a very long time. This book required an intense amount of research. Mm. And so when I was finished and I talked to my agent and my publisher, and I knew that this book was not right for where I was publishing my other novels, they felt that a change in name needed to happen because I'd spent the last 18 years, you know, building my reputation as a contemporary author. I disagreed to a certain extent, so I was willing to keep my name but change my name, if that makes sense. So it indicates is a slight shift in genre from contemporary to historical.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry I asked. Let me just ask you about what you learned about C.S. Lewis. So you are already a creepy C.S. Lewis fan prior to writing this book, but then after this intense research into Joy... What did you learn about C.S. Lewis that really kind of came out of left field? Because you kind of knew a whole ton about him anyway, but now that you've researched Joy, what messed with your head?
Wow, it was how much she helped him with his work. I just was stunned that we were that she was always portrayed as the dying wife of C.S. Lewis, who, you know, poor Joy, she was dying and he married her, and then he was grief-stricken and wrote A Grief Observed about it, and it's all so sad, so sad. Oh my gosh, not true. They were co-writers, they were intellectual equals. His last four or five greatest works were heavily influenced by her. If she was either typing the pages or commenting on the pages or actually co-writing with him, especially his, what I believe is his finest novel, Till We Have Faces. She co-wrote that with him from the get-go, from the germination of the story to the finish. The themes of their love story are in there. The themes of the of true self and hiding behind a mask are in there. All the things they ever talked about happiness, when you're your most happy or most joyful, it makes you long for even more. That word I can't say that begins with an S, Schenk, the German word for longing. Like, these were things they spent their whole relationship discussing, and yet it all ends up in that novel because they co-wrote it together. And I wanted to know, it just stunned me. You asked what stunned me the most, and that we're always talking about the woman behind the man. Can we please talk about the woman beside the man?
You go, girl. You go.
Thank you. I am. I almost stood up.
Patty, what can you remember about your memoir called My Life?
You really did creep on me. Yes, when I was 11 or 12 years old, I wrote a memoir called My Life. It is literally the most boring memoir ever.
I love it. I love it when TMZ covers some pop star, you know, in their 20s who comes out with their biography or their memoir. It's like, oh my goodness.
I know. It's like, and then my parents took me to school.
Yeah.
And then I did my homework. And then I went to the beach. And then, yeah, that's pretty much all it was. And with pictures of me doing such boring things.
It's like having a millennial mentor.
Oh, I have three millennial children, so I'm sorry that made me laugh.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Like, seriously, no one under 50 should be a life coach. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel. Okay, moving on.
So, and my mom's side is from same, but they're more from Killarney. So I have it on both sides. But I went last summer to County Clare for a week and did a walking tour and totally immersed myself in the land.
Nice.
And I just... you know, I don't know who does or doesn't believe in the kind of rootedness of your past, but being there, I could feel it. I knew it. It was a place I was from. It was a place that was part of me. And I'm going to Belfast in November again. It's a magical and mystical place for
good.
Sure.
Yeah, it is.
Lewis is from. He's from Belfast. He was born and raised in Belfast until his mother died when he was eight or nine. And he ended up in boarding school after that, but that's where he was born and raised.
Well, the Marshalls, we were sent from Scotland to Northern Ireland to piss off the Catholics. County Tyrone, near Omagh, was where our family was from. But your father was a preacher, yes?
Yes, he, I guess I should say is, because he's still with us, but he's not actively preaching anymore. My dad is 81, and he was a Presbyterian pastor for all of his life until he retired, and he still does some teaching and counseling and weddings and, you know, things like that. But his full-time preaching he doesn't have a church anymore, obviously. But yeah, that's how I grew up. I grew up in New Jersey and Philadelphia until I was about 12. And then my dad started a church in South Florida, which of course we know is in the South, but not Southern. And then they now live in Bluffton, South Carolina. But yeah, we kind of moved all over the place, but he always had a church.
And Patty, what do you miss most about nursing?
Oh, wow. What a good question. You like when I say that, so I thought I'd say it again. nobody's asked me that in a long while. I miss the patients. I was a pediatric clinical nurse specialist, and I miss going to work and having a community, and the families and the children. But 'cause now I work alone, totally. I mean, writing is a very alone. You can't write with other people. And even if you did, it, you still have to actually do the words alone. So I do miss that. I do miss the getting up and going to a community of people with a common goal, but not enough to go back to it.
No. Okay. Well, let's finish the conversation with a little TMZ kind of nonsense. Who is going to play Joy in your movie?
Ooh, I think about that sometimes. And right now my top contender is, I really think, Claire Foy. She played, you know who she is? She played the Queen on The Crown.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
She's just got that thing where she can be assertive and she's got the bone structure. Joy was the daughter of two middle European immigrant parents, Polish and Russian. So she has that like high cheekbones and that kind of middle European look with big round eyes. So I also thought about Amy Adams with those big round eyes of hers.
You know, this movie, it needs to get done quick because there's only one actor who could ever play C.S. Lewis, and he's getting up there in years.
Yeah, we're going to have to find a new one. You want to know who I think?
Who?
Colin Firth.
Interesting.
Right? You can see it, though, can't you?
But he's kind of too tall and proper, shoulders back kind of. You need more somebody more frumpy, don't you?
A little more slouchy?
A little more slouchy.
Well, I think he can be because he's getting a little older too. So he's got the little kind of jowls now in a very handsome way. And I bet he could kind of stoop his shoulders and put a pipe in. So yeah. I'm sure there's many people who could portray him with great authenticity.
Well,
so let's send that energy out for it to be a movie sooner rather than later.
Okay. All right. Listen, this was enjoyable.
Really fun.
I sounded Irish when I said that. By the way, you know all you got to do to make something sound Irish is just make it sound like a question.
Oh my gosh, you're right. That's brilliant. I'm stealing that because every time I try to sound Irish, I sound Jamaican. I can't quite get the Irish accent down, but I can turn everything into a question.
No, that was horrible. You got to go down before you go up. So you could turn everything into a question.
There you go.
Any elocution lessons, just give me a call. Listen, you are actually, like I actually am going to read this book. I probably shouldn't say that on air because I don't read most of the books that, you know, the authors I know. I just don't. I don't want to have excuses. I just don't. But I really don't read fiction. I just don't. Last fiction book I read was The Shack, and this is going to be the next one.
Whoa. So let's say that because that's going to happen, I'm going to sell as many copies as The Shack.
Oh, okay. Let's put that out into the universe.
Let's put that out. No, I'm honored that you're going to read it. And when you do, please email me and tell me or call me and tell me how you felt about it. I'll be really curious. I could talk to you about this for another half hour, another hour. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Well, thank you, Patty. And again, folks, the website is Patty Callahan Henry. Patty Callahan Henry. It's P-A-T-T-I. Callahan's got two L's in it, and Henry has a Y in it. I don't know. Does that help? PattyCallahanHenry.com. And, of course, the book is Becoming Mrs. Lewis. We'll be right back. Stay with us.